Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
You can buy a real estate asset, great, but if you got a bad operator or a bad management company, they could run it into the ground, they can suck your cash flow. One eviction and unit turn can dry up your cash flow for years if you got to do the renovations again. So it all comes down to operations, and third party's just not going to do it as well as you are.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I am your host, Joe Cornwell, and today I am joined by Wyatt Simon. Today's episode is brought to you by BAM Capital, a trusted multifamily syndicator that has never missed a preferred payment and never lost an LP's investment. To learn more about investment opportunities with BAM Capital, visit capital.thebamcompanies.com or click the link in the show notes. He's a principal investor. They focus on value-add real estate. He currently has 176 units under management valued over $20 million, mix of units with the largest being 54. He also runs his own property management company that self-manages their entire portfolio. Wyatt, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Joe?
I'm very good. Thank you. I know this is your first time on the show, so let's spend a little bit of time on your background. Where'd you come from? And then how did you get into real estate?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Colorado and thought I was going to play in the NBA. Unfortunately, I ended up being 5'11 and white, and that didn't happen. But my journey took me to Nebraska to play college at a small college in Nebraska, where I met my wife, who is from Omaha. So I landed in this beautiful snowy state of Nebraska right now. Back up a second, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And after reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I said, there's got to be a way to have these assets make money for me while I sleep. So that was what sparked the journey, much like everybody else. And I started buying real estate. Now, I didn't have a bunch of money. So I started with a duplex, living in one side and renting out the other, and got a sales job. And then started buying properties using the BRRRR strategy, mostly single family. Started really slow. In the first year, I bought a duplex and a single family. Next year, I bought three single families. Next year, I bought six single families. And then the year after that, I bought 20 single families, and then eventually moved into about 20 properties a year along with multifamily. So just kind of the stack like you see a lot of investors do. It was a slow journey and started figuring out a lot of stuff along the way, and I guess the last thing I'll say is I set up a management company about 2 years ago as well to manage the portfolio. I know we were talking earlier, you did too. So that's me.
So take me back to what was the first year you bought your first rental when you were house hacking?
2018, I moved to Nebraska and spent 6 months after work looking for a duplex. Could not find one, kept getting outbid. Eventually had to put in an offer, $15,000 ahead over ask and no inspections, and finally got a duplex. And of course, the day after moving in, it's the middle of summer, the AC goes out. So hit with a $350 AC bill. It's 100 degrees in the unit the day of moving in. That's the first experience to real estate. So I quit there, and then that's the end of the story, right?
Yeah, it's tough. There's a lot of first-time investors, first couple deals. I think that's the hardest point for most people. Definitely when most people quit, when they have challenges or they have a deal go really bad because they didn't know what they were doing. And it's an easy way to look at real estate and say, oh, well, this isn't possible. It doesn't work. It's too hard. And then either sell it and move on or quit scaling. With that in mind, I made a note of something you said here where you went from 6 single families in 1 year to 20. That's quite the jump. What was that process like? I think that you said that was in year 2 or 3 when you started making that leap of scale. And how did you accomplish that?
Well, first off, it was in year 4. So it took a long time to get there. It's just slow. People don't talk about that enough. They just want to say, man, this guy crushed it in his 20s. It's like, well, no, my first 3 years, it was slow and it was hard, but I was learning. Year 4, I said, all right, this is enough. I'm tired of buying properties on market. So I set up my own direct seller system with my business partner. So we started mailing properties, going out, running our own appointments and getting our own leads. And that allowed us to set up our own deal flow and start buying more deals.
Okay. Did you have a partner this entire time, or at what point did you bring on a partner?
My first 8 properties were on my own. And then I brought on a partner when I, again, wanted to stop buying on-market deals. So I was trying to do off-market things on my own. And I got pointed out by a coach. He said, you know what, Wyatt, you're a sales guy. You're not a systems guy. So you really need to bring on someone that can help you out with this. So brought on a systems guy, and just like clockwork, we bought 20 properties that next year.
Yeah, I know you mentioned you were in sales. What type of sales were you doing?
So I work for a foundation company here in Omaha, and we traveled 4 different states doing foundation sales, large projects. Our average sale was probably $9,800. So I got comfortable with big numbers, and I got good at listening to people's needs and connecting how we could help them.
Okay. And this was foundation repairs or new construction foundations? Like what type of foundation
work? Yeah, mostly foundation repair. So I was kind of like a doctor for a house. You didn't want to see me, but I could diagnose it and figure out what we needed to do to fix it. And I saw a lot of crazy foundations.
Okay. So you got some experience in sales. Obviously, that translates to real estate, and you happen to be in a business surrounded by or involving real estate in your sales job. So I'm sure that helped correlate to doing some of the off-market campaigns and trying to connect with sellers and hopefully provide a win-win situation for them. Tell me a little bit about how that process started and what was your role with the new partnership?
Yeah, well, I met my partner through church actually years before we had partnered. It was a friend of mine that said, hey, you're in real estate. You got to meet my buddy. So Sean French is his name. And we ended up meeting at a Whole Foods, which I thought was super weird because who meets at Whole Foods, right? But when you get to know Sean, he's the healthiest man in the world. So it made sense later on. But he was also trying to do his own direct seller system. Again, he was a systems guy, but he is not a sales guy. Front facing, he doesn't do that well. So eventually I was trying to do it on my own and I couldn't. And I bought one property in 6 months and it just wasn't consistent. It wasn't working well. So I saw Sean at a meetup, and I saw him at a meetup continually. I knew of him. And eventually I told him at the meetup, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. Maybe you want to try this out. We can split it 50-50. And then he took the bull by the horns from there. And he set up our data, started mailing on a consistent basis. And then he started setting appointments for me. And then I would go out there after work and go on these appointments. And again, just listen to the seller's problems. Sometimes the investors get a bad rep because you think you're taking advantage of people. But most of the time, the 10% of people that we go out there, we're helping. 90%, go sell it on the market. That's your best option. And I'm listening as to why you want to work with me. And then we're solving the problem for you, which is speed and convenience.
Absolutely. Wholesalers do get a bad rap. Some of it deserved. I've worked with a lot. I've wholesaled a couple of properties kind of like incidentally, I would say, not necessarily what I was trying to do, but I get a lead off market for something that's just not what I buy or not where I buy. And I was able to do contract assignments. But again, never like what I set out to do. But as you mentioned, a good wholesaler is going to create solutions for both the seller and the end buyer. And that should be their place in the market if they're doing things legally and correctly. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't, and they're just trying to peddle bad deals, and they're making promises and writing checks they can't cash to sellers and buyers. And obviously, that's why wholesalers overall, the industry has such a bad reputation.
Yeah, if I could expand on that too. So most of the appointments we went on, we bought. I would say we bought about 75% of the properties using the BRRRR strategy. And again, I'm not super loaded. I was making a good amount of money in the sales job, but we were not able to leave much cash, if any, into deals. So in 2 years, we picked up 28 properties. So maybe it's about 60% of the properties we picked up for quote unquote free. And then the other properties that we couldn't burr out of 100% is when we would either wholesale it or flip it ourselves. So I can tell you that there's only one property ever in my career that I put under contract that I have not closed on. And that was very, very early on in my journey, even prior to partnering with Sean.
And that's great. Obviously, you are going into these deals with good intentions, and I think that's the main thing that separates good and bad wholesalers. And one question I had, when you went into that fourth year and you did the 20 single families, what was your motivation to stay on the path of doing single family deals? And reading your background, it sounds like obviously at some point that transitioned into multifamily. So walk me through that psychology.
Yeah, well, first off, multifamily never really crossed my mind until we already set up the single family system. I had a lot of experience with Bigger Pockets, and in Bigger Pockets at the time, they weren't really talking about multifamily. It was just all single family. So that's where I was coming from, that narrow lens. Eventually, once we did 20 properties 1 year, another 20 properties the next year, it was like, okay, there's going to be economies of scale here if we could just pick up multifamily and not do 20 individual transactions, but do one or two or four. So in the year of 2021 is when I was fortunate enough to come across a 23 unit off market that I purchased. And that was my first step into multifamily. After doing that transaction, it just really opened my eyes to the scalability that it landed. It was a little bit more work than a single family, but it wasn't 23 times as much work. It was maybe 1.5 times as much work and was so much worth it on the back end.
And that's a great point. And I think that's often overlooked. You hear a lot of new investors when they're reading books, listening to podcasts like this, they hear people talking about these different motivations for going after single family or multifamily. And I have a similar background. My investing was predominantly the BRRRR model for the first 6-7 years I was investing, and it allowed me to scale. But as I became a more experienced investor, I got out of looking at types of deals or even specific neighborhoods, and I got much more comfortable with just doing good deals. That's what I like to tell people. I look for good deals, whatever that may be. If it's 50 units, great. If it's a duplex, great. I don't do a lot of single families, but I've done a few. But the point I'm getting to is that as you become more experienced and more sophisticated as an investor, you also have to look at not only the economies of scale, because it may be a bigger deal, which is obviously a benefit of that, but you also have to look at the bandwidth it's going to take and your motivations change. As you make more money and you have more cash flow and your net worth grows, your motivations are going to be different, because doing a single family or duplex or something, if you're making $100,000 a month in cash flow, you're not really going to have as much motivation to go after that $200 or $400 or $600 a month in cash flow, because that amount of work it's going to add to your plate could be significant unless you have a really large team built out or something. So it's just something I want to caution the listeners with, where not only do you have to look at it as, does the deal itself make sense, but does this make sense in my strategy, and how much time and effort and bandwidth is this going to take from me as an investor? And it sounds like part of your transition to multifamily was looking at all three sides of that.
Yeah, it's so true. I can't tell you how many deals come across our plate that are just on the other side of the border, like with Iowa or just south of Omaha. It's tempting to go after these deals, but the bandwidth it would take, and I know we both self-manage, right? So I have a team that does all of our management of our 176 units. So for our team to actually go into different markets, it just takes a lot of time and effort, and it's just not worth it. So I've had to say no to deals that are not there, and we only focus on Omaha and Lincoln. That's it.
That was going to be my follow-up question. So all of these are in general area in which you're based, the deals you've done and have held.
Yep, 60-mile radius of Omaha.
Okay, makes sense.
We'll get back to the show, but first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. Deciding how to invest your capital is more challenging than ever. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company with a solid track record and that has thrived through various economic cycles. companies like BAM Capital. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator that has delivered a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. BAM Capital has never missed a preferred payment, never lost an LP's investment, and never called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital is currently raising capital for a fund designed for accredited investors, targeting a 15 to 20% IRR and a 2 to 2.5x equity multiple to its investors over a 3 to 5 year hold period. If you're an accredited investor and you want to learn more about multifamily investment opportunities with BAM Capital, visit capital.thebamcompanies.com. Again, that's capital.thebamcompanies.com.
So tell me a little bit about some of the larger multifamily deals. At what point in your journey did you transition into those, and what did that first large deal look like?
It was 2021, which had been 4 years into my journey, is when I landed my first multifamily deal. It was a 23 unit off market through a family relationship that we had. So long story short, ended up buying it. They owned it in cash. And so I was able to get it seller financed, put 10% down. And then out of that 10%, I partnered with another guy and I had an acquisition fee. So I brought very little capital to that transaction to own 50% of 23 units, which was a great start. And then we completed the value add strategy. We raised the rents. Operating costs stayed pretty steady on that one. And we were able to take that asset value and almost double it in less than a year. So that was a good deal.
Are any of these that you have done the value add with, did you sell them? Did you refi them? What has your exit been on these?
We did a refi and we got a large refi check out, which was great. And then just put that into more deals. And then what we've been doing is just continuing to do the value add strategy. And after that, bought a 9 unit. After that, bought a 12 unit. After that, bought a 26 unit townhome complex. After that, bought a 36 unit and an 18 unit. So I picked up these small to mid multis and done one syndication. As you leave money in deals, you run out of cash at some point. So we syndicated the 36 unit, that was last year, and just continuing to do the value add strategy and keep stacking assets.
What's interesting to me with your story is so many people I talk to across the country, whether it's this show or other networking events, talk about how there's no deals out there. There's nothing to invest in. Interest rates were up to 8%. You can't make deals work. Obviously, that's not the case. So tell me how in the last 12 months you have been sourcing these deals and putting them together.
Well, first off, it is hard. There's a headwind in the industry, or there was. Hopefully, interest rates are coming down. But it wasn't easy. I can tell you this year, we only have bought two deals. And out of the multifamily, it was an 18 unit off market. And we sourced it because it was right next to our syndication that we bought. So pro tip, if you're buying assets, go meet the neighbors, build relationships, and your value add there is if they're going to list it with a broker, they're going to pay the broker fees. If you can buy it for market value and they don't have to pay the broker fee, then you're going to get it at some kind of a discount, or hey, at least you're going to get it.
Right. You're not competing with 20 other offers like we did the last few years prior to this year. So not having competition in and of itself is a massive value off market.
Big time. That's just what we've been doing. And I can't say it's been easy this year. I probably analyzed between 85 to 100 properties that we put offers on, and we've gotten one. So I'm not pencils down. Like a lot of people are pencils down. I'm still making offers. I'm still doing follow-up, and good things happen to those who keep going. And I think that's the trick. Just don't stop and you don't lose.
Yeah. What's the quote there? It's luck in preparation create opportunity, or something like that. Or opportunity is the mix of luck and preparation, right? Or something
yeah.
like that.
Preparation plus opportunity equals luck. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. You got it. Thank you. Yep. Great point. So tell me a little bit about your property management company. Now, I know you said you brought everything in-house. Was it always self-managed? Did you transition at some point?
So when I bought my first 23 unit in 2021, I had 15 properties, and then I was self-managing 15 properties while working a full-time job, while doing the single family acquisition. And then 2021 hit and there was no way I can do self-management for a 23 unit. So partnered with a management company. The management company that we bought it with, we were just going to keep it with them. They were doing an awful job. They continued to do an awful job, even with our business plan. So then we fired them. We hired another one. They came in, guns blazing, saying they were going to do great. And 2-3 months later, nothing changes. We're like, okay, this isn't working. So eventually at the end of 2021, I decided, okay, I've got enough deal flow coming in. It's time. I'm going to leave my W-2 and I'm going to set up a property management company to service the portfolio because I plan on doing this long time and I want it to be done and ran as efficient as possible. So that was when I made the jump. And again, it was not easy. I came from a sales guy that was good at my job. If you leave me alone, I'm going to do great. To coming into running a property management company. And there's a lot of skill sets that I had to learn. And unfortunately, I had to learn the hard way. I hired people I shouldn't have. So the first year was just tough. It was a big learning curve. It was not easy. But I just kept going, kept learning. And at this point, now we have 4 full-time employees. We've got really a property manager underneath me. We call him the director. He runs the majority of the company. We've got 2 full-time maintenance techs, 1 in each city that we manage in. And then we've got a virtual assistant full-time with us. And then we also have a leasing agent that is part-time and helps out.
Okay. What management system are you guys using?
We run everything off of AppFolio.
AppFolio. Gotcha. Yep. That's what we just switched to as well this year.
Yeah. How's bookkeeping going for you?
Yeah, it's tough. I have kept my books with QuickBooks all the way up until this year, and I'm going to close out this year with QuickBooks and then transition to using AppFolio system. It's not as intuitive and comprehensive as QuickBooks is, but the benefit for me is it allowed me to offload that to my assistant who also does a lot of our property management. So it'll save a lot of time for me, but yeah, it's definitely way more time consuming than QuickBooks has been.
Yeah. Dude, that kicked my butt for a while. I went through 3 different firms for bookkeeping. And one of them I outgrew, and then the other 2 just did not deliver. And it was trial by fire. And it really sucks when you're doing that with books. So thank God we found a good bookkeeper earlier this year. And things have been just so much smoother now that you can track everything and have a clean year.
So are they utilizing the books through AppFolio, or are they doing it separately?
Yeah, we run everything through AppFolio. And then my VA does all of our bank recs for everything that he can, which is usually 85 to 90%. And then after that, I'll do a pass. And then after that, we have a fractional CFO that we hired to do the complete and finalize rec.
Cool. For anyone listening to this, you may not be self-managing your portfolio, but what I would challenge the listener with is if you are a small-time investor and you have 1 or 2 properties, even if you're remote, if you're not happy with your property manager, I would absolutely give it a shot. I think the difficulties of management are overblown by many people, especially at a small scale. As you get larger and grow scale, it does become more difficult and more complicated. You need more employees, more infrastructure, of course, like any other company as it grows. But when it's small, it's definitely doable. And I'm an agent also. I work with a lot of out-of-state clients, and I always challenge them. If you got a duplex, fourplex, try to manage it. Just see how it goes. And if 3 months or 6 months, you hate it, you're miserable, or if you're making $500K a year and that 10% fee is irrelevant to you, well, then okay. Obviously, it may make sense to bring in third-party management. But the number one complaint I hear from investors, especially those out of state, is how bad their management is. And it sounds like you had a similar experience.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think it's not talked about enough. People talk about buying real estate and they say, well, if you buy it right, that's all it is. I'd argue it's about 60 to 70% operations. You can buy a real estate asset, great, but if you got a bad operator or a bad management company, they could run it into the ground, they can suck your cash flow. 1 eviction and unit turn can dry up your cash flow for years if you got to do the renovations again. So it all comes down to operations, and third party's just not going to do it as well as you are. So if you can do it, I'd say up to 15. 15 was my capacity to self-manage and still have a life.
Yeah, that reminds me of another quote, and I'll probably butcher this one as well, but it's a good manager will not make a bad deal good, but a bad manager can definitely make a good deal bad. Something like that. Very true. I think operations have been talked about more this year, especially with people slowing down on acquisitions, and people with sizable portfolios have certainly started paying a lot more attention to maximizing their efficiencies and operations. So I'm starting to see that become a little bit more topic of discussion, but you're right. The last 7-8 years that I've been in real estate, 90% of the conversations were about how to get started, how to acquire more, how to scale. And I think having effective operations is a large percentage of success for most operators of various small and large sizes. So you're absolutely right. And it needs to be a focus for anybody listening to this.
Yeah. And I do teach on this too. So I do have a coaching course where I go over all the automated systems that I use and to help people that want to self-manage, right? It's really doable up to, I'd say, about 15 units. You can get Google Voice number. You can use softwares out there that automate a lot of things. You can partner with websites like Avail and Stessa, which are bookkeeping and property management websites that just make it really easy for the beginner. They already have your contracts, your leases. It's not that hard. And you could even do it if you're not in state, by all the technology and the systems that are out there. So it's doable.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing I tell a lot of my clients, it's like your property manager, if they're of any size and scale, is not going to be the boots on the ground person that's going to the properties anyway. So my point is that if they're not doing it, then you don't have to do it. You can be anywhere in the world. And if you find a decent handyman, if you find a decent person to open the doors for potential lease ups, everything else can be done remotely. So those are the only two people, and that could be the same person or two different people that you really need to have that will answer the phone and show up when you call. And if you have to pay them well, you're still probably paying them more than a property manager is going to. So back to my point, challenge anybody to try it at least on a small scale.
Yep. Well said.
Awesome. Let's transition to best ever lightning round. You ready?
I'm ready.
What is your best ever book recommendation?
7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'll say second to the Bible, 7 Habits. It impacted my life so much. I read that when I was 22, and it's a thick book. I will say it's heavy. It took me several passes. It's a book I read every single year, and I learn every single time something new. Stephen Covey was an amazing guy.
Best ever way you like to give back?
Part of my church. I'm a believer myself. Jesus changed my life. So I believe in tithing, giving the community, and then also serving the community. So I'm a greeter at church, go to Bible studies, and just talk about him.
Give me a mistake you made in one of the deals you've done and the lesson learned from it.
Ooh, talk about the Purple Palace. The third deal I ever did was a single family, and I'll backtrack. The second deal I did was a burr that went phenomenal. Burred out 100%. It went great. Proof of concept. Let's just do this, right? Third deal I did. Nightmare. So bought the Purple Palace, bought it for $30,000, a little crappy 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house, bought it in Bellevue, which is a suburb of Omaha that has city inspectors that are a lot more strict. So I didn't even know that you needed permits for remodeling houses. I was going to do a lot of the work myself, got red tagged by the city. And so they shut it down, had to get a bunch of licensed contractors out there, built a garage that I had to get torn down. Just a nightmare. That one took me 11 months to figure out and finally complete. And it ballooned. The rehab that I thought was going to be $25,000 was $65,000. And then as soon as that tenant moved in, I got a call saying, it smells really bad downstairs. And I was like, what? So sent a guy over there. Sewage is backing up. So didn't get a sewage inspection. Turns out it was old Orange Bird pipe that was completely gone. So had to redo $14,000 from all the way out from the house to the city, redig that pipe. So that was a fun project to say the least, but thankfully I did buy it super under market. So I was able to burr all of it out, but that one was 9 months longer than I initially planned. And instead of being a home run, was a squeaky single.
Yeah, I've had a few of those, so I feel your pain and I totally relate. Where can our audience learn more about you and connect with you?
Very active on Facebook. If you want to look me up on Facebook, Wyatt Simon, go to Instagram, Wyatt Buys Buildings. And then my website is wyattsimon.com. And on there, I've got a bunch of free resources, guides for how to do property management, anything like that, wyattsimon.com.
Awesome. And we will be sure to link to that in the show notes as well. Wyatt, thank you so much for joining us. Audience, if you got value from today's show, please leave us a 5-star review. Make sure you're following us on social media. And I hope you all have a best ever day. Wyatt, thanks again.
Thanks, Joe.
Hi, best ever listeners, Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.